Hello, everyone out there in podcast land, in the pagan folk realm. We are Mead and Moonlight, and we're back for another episode about our favorite thing in the world, pagan folk music. I am Nicholas, and with me today, as always, is Kuhn. Hello, Kuhn.
Guten Abend. It's good to be back, and I could name some other things that are very, very close to my favorite things, Niklas. But we are very passionate about this this here beautiful genre of gorgeous world folk with a spiritual load to it.
I don't know. I was getting a bit too. I it felt like an introduction for someone who hadn't listened to the podcast before. So sorry for everyone who's like regularly tuning in, for being so distant. Hello, you all you lovely people who listen to it regularly. That was just for those who might be first time listeners. And I guess I went a bit overboard with that.
Yeah, the new influx of people, they also need to be recognized. But yes. We do recognize our loyal listeners. And we even got some nice, warm and fuzzy personal messages on Facebook from people that really like the podcast. And that's really good to hear. And we're happy to be sort of offering you a substitution to the things that are not going on by giving you something that is going on, our podcast.
Yeah. Precisely. That's really to the point what we're doing. So, this is actually the new episode in a new segment that we sort of want to establish. You might know that for the last couple episodes, we've been sort of going through, playing live and how all of that works for us and how it makes us feel. And, we're probably going to return to that topic eventually, but for now we thought it could be fun to mix it up a bit. And this new sort of series that we want to do is about, you know, some pagan folk classics, some albums that we feel or that we really like and that we feel really shaped the genre as we know it today. And the first album was a pick by me, and so today we're going to talk about the album Eden by the band Faun. Kuhn, do you like that album?
Oh, yes, I do. I even remember when I was really in the middle of my fanboy period of my life, I went up to Ollie to tell him, this is the pinnacle of your music. This is the best album. And I remember his answer very clearly. He said to me, "Well, it better be, because I don't think we can ever top this." So there's some beautiful, beautiful songs on there, ranging from slowly ballady, emotional, to great up tempo flute riffs and spiritual pieces about the god of the forest. And yep, I really like it. I really like it. From the music to the perfectly designed booklet, it's a total package.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can even still remember when I first heard it. I think, the album was released in 2011, and I was still living with my parents, and I remember being sick, actually, and being in our living room and lying on the sofa, and I remember having pre-ordered the album. That was only the second ever Faun album, I think, I listened to. I started listening to them when they released their, their unplugged acoustic album, Buch der Balladen. And then Eden was the second album of them I ever listened to. And I remember, like, lying on the sofa in my parents' living room and like listening to the album on their like on this big stereo system that they have there, and being very mesmerized and also being a bit dizzy from being like from being sick and from being ill. And then yeah, it was very magical. So yeah, so basically what I think could be a nice idea for you, we're gonna go in a while, we're gonna go through each song for a while, and maybe you can just sort of like stop the podcast every once in a while, listen to that song, and then listen listen to the segment where we sort of talk about the song. Or if you're just if you're a big fan and you know the songs by heart, then of course maybe you don't need to do that. Yeah, but I think that's that maybe that could be a way how we can make this a more interesting experience, maybe. But that's up to you, really. I mean, we're not going to do that because that's going to be like a pain in the ass to edit. But yeah. Oh, sorry that I is cursing. Okay, I think did we ever establish that?
PG-13.
Yeah. All right. I guess. Well, we can allow ourselves a curse once in a while.
I think it was still very, very minimal.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you could go a lot worse.
All right. So, yeah, the album Eden, as we said, it was released in 2011. It has a total runtime of 72 minutes and 12 seconds, which is super long for an album, I think. It was, back then it was released on Screaming Banshee and Alive, which I don't think Screaming Banshee still exists. I think they are, yeah, I think they are sort of defunct as of now.
Yeah, and, sadly.
Yeah, I think, yeah, well, 72 minutes, yeah. So the album starts right off with the song Lupercalia, which is, if I remember correctly, which is sort of like a song that is about a real-life sort of pagan holiday event. Isn't that right?
Yeah, it is an ancient Roman festival to avert evil spirits and purify the city, releasing health and fertility. So there is loads of ancient rites, festivals that have carried over to this day. So I wouldn't be surprised if they still do this.
And I think, the lyrics for that song are actually, I think, taken from the ancient poet Ovid, from one of his poems. And I think that album also features a guest musician in the form of the voices of the medieval babes as a sort of choir. And I honestly have to say that probably Lupercalia is probably one of my least favorite songs from the album. I remember when I listened to it more regularly, I would just always just straight away start with the second song. But how do you feel about it?
Brutal, Niklas. Just instantly going in there with this is my least favorite. Well, I don't think I can necessarily name my least favorite, but there's definitely my super favorite songs, which are more memorable to me. And, well, this one is not one of the super favorites. But then again, you need to something to sort of ease in the album. This one is not up there for me either. No.
Oh, by the way, I think, so sorry about if this is a bit all over the place. This is the first time we're doing this format. Maybe we should, before we go any further, we should have sort of talked about the concept of the album, because this is actually a concept album about sort of the idea of like a heavenly garden, of an oasis of paradise, basically, and how paradise was perceived in different cultures and religions around the world. So that's also why the album is called Eden. I think that might be important to know for people who are not super familiar with the album. And that's sort of like the part, sort of the concept where, and every song is somewhat related to that.
Yeah, and there's also some spoken word that sort of deals with, it definitely says the word paradise. Paradise. Paradise a couple of times, so it's in there if you listen very close. I think that it's very nice how they've taken that whole concept, like Eden, paradise, heaven, call it whatever you want. It's in every mythological story. It's a place in every mythological world from every culture, and that definitely reflects with them going from Roman to Norse and so to biblical stuff.
Having talked about the first the concept now in the first song, maybe we can already start going to the second song, which I think is one. I think it's one of the most well-known songs, might even from Faun. I think there's a lot of love for it, I believe.
Is it? Why do you say that?
Maybe it's just like a German thing, because the lyrics being German, I find them. I don't know. I've seen a lot of people sharing that song when they talk about their favorite Faun song and stuff like that. Because I think, obviously, I mean, maybe we are talking about the song Zeitgeist, of course. Because I think like the lyrical concept of the song resonates with a lot of people who are pagan folk fans. Do you know what the word Zeitgeist means?
If I would go literal, time spirit.
Yeah, it's one of these. I think it's one of those German terms that have sort of established itself in the English language as well. I mean, I think like spirit of the age, or maybe like spirit of the times, maybe like a somewhat close translation. And so basically the song talks about, the human desire to sort of, create and find new ways of conquering Earth and conquering nature, but also, but all of that being born out of a desire to sort of return to a paradise that has been lost to us, and maybe trying... Yeah, and then basically pagan folk, or being one of the ways that we can try connect to that paradise that might still exist in ways that are less harmful than total domination of the planet.
Yeah, which humans love to do, of course, eliminate all threats.
And I think, I think Zeitgeist also was part of their life set for a while, and it had like this spoken word a bit, sort of where Oliver would do like a little talk, or maybe I'm mistaken, maybe that was Hymn to Pan. I think that was Hymn to Pan, right?
Yeah, that was Hymn to Pan, yeah.
Oh, damn it.
It's okay.
Well, but I think that's sort of what Zeitgeist sort of is about conceptually, and then musically I think it's just very very catchy, and it also features another guest performance. It features Faun's former hurdy-gurdy player and singer Sandra Elflein on the hurdy-gurdy for that song.
I love her.
So do you find yourself returning to that song?
I think it's really good, and it has some very very epic musical crescendos with the bagpipes, right? I like that, and I'm quite a sucker to Ollie's Ollie's honeyed voice, basically. It's very, very, it's definitely not as a vocal sound that many people share. And then on top of there, there's the German. And like, my German is okay when I listen to it and I can sort of follow it, but it's also not that good that for me as a non-German, it's like more fantastical as well. It's like when you listen to Nordic songs where I don't follow anything, but I feel the song, and that's the same, same here.
Yeah. I think that's definitely also a song where I sort of would wish that maybe they'll get that one into their set list for some concerts again. But I think at this point they have so many albums and so many songs out, it's probably hard to decide what songs you want to put into a set list with still like honoring the classics but also wanting to play some new stuff.
Yep, and maybe also having people sort of mingling if there's a discrepancy between what the band wants to play and what they should be playing, like for the audience and what works. I recognize it a lot when people request a song and they're like, oh no, not that one, that's but you can't leave it out, you know. It's so this album compared to their newer stuff, it might be called less accessible. I still think this album is very accessible, but I listen to the genre a lot. But compared to like Tanz mit mir, I can't really follow that stuff, and I completely follow this. But I can see where a bigger audience might find this maybe even a bit scary or something, because there's a message in.
Oh well. Yeah, I think, there's probably gonna, there's probably some truth in that. And then we're gonna go over to the next song, to the third song of the album, which actually is a song that they still play live a lot, which is the song Iduna.
Yep, that's where they skim over to the Nordic realm.
Yeah, so the song Iduna is named after a figure from Norse mythology, after the goddess Idun, who was sort of the guardian of the golden apples, which, if I remember correctly, sort of gave the Norse gods their immortality and their power. And, there is a story where Loki sort of screws with that, and then Well, I don't know. I don't want to like retell the story. I probably also can't. But yeah, and I think they draw some comparisons to other mythological gardens where there's some golden apples. I think there's also something similar in Greek mythology, actually, and also maybe in Celtic mythology. And it just calls back to this sort of shared theme of of paradise, where there's like a golden, an apple and a garden with the secret of immortality and sort of like peace. And and it's I think the lyrics are taken from a Norwegian source, from some sort of myth or a poem.
You've done your homework, sir.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't want to like just rattle everything down that's like information that's available, but maybe some insight can be interesting. And I think
I think too.
That song has a very intense musically, also a northern vibe, with featuring the Nickelharper very prominently. And I think actually I saw Faun this year, before sort of the whole quarantine thing came down on us, and I remember that song being played, and then there is this moment where the melody kicks back in, and that was a moment where I think Fiona, Oliver, Stefan, and then their guest violin player Florian sort of stepped all made like almost a leap forwards onto the edge of the stage and just, you know, had this very powerful moment of like just playing this melody with like four melody instruments. And it was just a very cool moment. I definitely have some good memories about that song being played live. How do you feel about it?
Well, if I'm, it's still not one of my favorites, but it's like, it's bam, it's in there. And it's definitely a very powerful melody. Well, for me, like found shows are always very epic, and they have all the lights down, and it just works, you know. I might or might not have had a super huge crush on Fiona to this day. So I might be a bit biased when she's like doing her little bagpipe step forward, step back, and so it's hard for me to look past that. But this is definitely a very nice and catchy song, and I love how they are starting to work that sort of concept that you just talked about with the golden apples, and then knowing that that also comes back again in later songs. It's cool, and it works, and I think they do a very good job at saying a sort of expressing the theme with instruments already. Like it doesn't have to always be fully vocal. They are very good at projecting a story, a concept through their instruments.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah, I think, yeah, I don't think we need to really, you know, pick our favorite songs of that album and then make like a top five or something. But for me, if we were to do that, that song would probably be in there somewhere. I think it's super, you know, it gets right to the point, and it's really, but it's still evocative without being, you know, drawn out or anything. I think it's a really good song, both for life and also on the CD.
Yeah.
So venturing onward, the fourth song is sort of more of like a musical interlude or intro to the fifth song that comes after that, and it's The Butterfly, which is a traditional Irish jig, which is just called the Butterfly Jig, I think. And it's one of those songs where I first heard it on this album, and then you know, listening just to some random Irish folk music, I came across it quite often. Obviously played in, you know, in different styles, but I think it's a very catchy melody, and we've definitely played it. Me at home, we've definitely played around with it just because it's such a lovely, like, little melody.
Yeah, I think there's hardly any like session on festivals where I've attended that song does not come up. And an interesting fun fact for you, Niklas, but also other musicians maybe, mm-hmm. that have someone to play it with, there is the butterfly and there's also the caterpillar. And if you look that up, you can perfectly play them at the same time, and it sounds really cool.
Oh, that's really cool. I did not know that. So, yeah, as I said, this is sort of like a musical interlude or an intro to the next song, which is the song Adam Lay Ebounden, which is, I think, like an old sort of English expression, or like an old English title. And I still, you know, when I got that album, I always would sort of like read along the lyrics and like the explanations about it when I was listening to it. And that song, I really like the concept of this song, because apparently it's about a Christian tradition or like a concept that is called felis culpa, which is sort of translate to the blissful fault, where like the original sin, you know, the part of the Bible where like they taste of the forbidden fruit is sort of described at being very blissful, because it sort of opened up sort of the experiences that Adam and Eve could have. Like it's sometimes it's interpreted at like discovering sexuality. So it's quite weird for a Christian text to deal with something like that in such an open way, I guess. But you know, and I always remember that like blissful fault, like filius culpa, was something that really ingrained itself in my head, because I thought it was so funny and so sort of magical that sort of was a Christian tradition, which I thought was very, like, from my perspective, felt very unusual for that religion.
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, you come across that a lot, that the image that we now have of Christianity and how some people, like mega churches, whatever, project it. It's like, oh, it's only rules and it's only sins and hell. But it's very interesting to delve into it deeper. And it's very interesting that Fan chose to do that and not just go for more like, okay, this is pagan. This has pagan written all over it. This will work. They're really going after that concept and sort of the fine line. And it's yeah. And for me, this is a very interesting, by the way, as well. I've never delved so deep into this album as we are doing right now. So I'm enjoying it, Nicolas.
Oh, yeah, I think that's sort of like the idea of the podcast, right? That we're sort of like all of these things, at least to me, that all of the things we've talked about, I've never probably thought so much about it than I did while talking to you. So it made me even more appreciative and grateful for, you know, being able to do this, and you know, this being both this podcast and also playing this kind of type of music. So I'm really enjoying it.
So
I also really liked Adam Leigh-Bound. Musically, it's sort of a very light song, and it always felt very English to me. I mean, that might be the lyrics, but I don't know. It just felt very British to me. I don't know. I should be able to explain that better, because, you know, being a musician and everything, but I don't know. It just always felt very fitting, like the musical interpretation of the lyrics.
It's definitely very... Well, okay... Maybe this is wrong, but so people can relate. It's basically one of the more goody two shoes song in there. If it was blessed be the time, so it's definitely completely different from where you have like ballsy bagpipes coming in and so I see what you mean. But English, yeah, maybe it has the tea and biscuit feel for you.
Probably. Okay, so let's talk about the next song, and I think this one is a big one.
Yes,
I think it's probably for like people who know Found for a while. It's probably gonna be in a lot of like top 5 or top 10 lists of all time favorite Found songs for a lot of people, and I think it also definitely has a spot there with me, and that song is song number 6, which is Hymn to Pan.
Listen now.
And
we shall follow.
Yeah. Yes, precisely. And yeah, that song, it's interesting because that song is actually partly, it's a cover song. I think, part of the song, I think it's sort of the second part. Is by a an American, like by two American musicians, and then the second part of the lyrics is by Oscar Wilde, you know, the famous Irish poet. Yeah, yeah. And I think they also took some musical clues from that American song. So it's sort of like, yeah, it's really interesting that they sort of took these two ideas lyrically and musically and just put it together to something that has become, I think, very iconic and beloved by a lot of people.
Yep. I remember the first time before. I think they played this before, before the album was released on Castlefest at some point, and it just got the energy flowing. Everybody was chanting along. It had this very, I mean, it's an interesting. It has a very flowy feel, and normally, like if you have the image of Pan, like the satyr, going around would be more like all over the place and more ballsy, and this just gets you in the trance that you would have if you would basically encounter Pan in an open field and feel your roots running through the forest. And I think they did that really, really well.
Yeah, I think, yeah, thinking back of like my first experiences about, you know, of listening to that song, I think it's definitely one of the songs that made me want to, you know, made me want to play pagan folk. And it definitely like formed my idea of what I think like pagan folk can be. Yeah. And I just thought about, I can't remember if I think I read it somewhere on the internet, like somewhere on like a live video of that song, because there is, when Found play that song live, there is a part, I don't know if they still do it, but yeah, there is like sort of a spoken word part where Oliver talks about like, you know, we should go back to nature and like connect with like our, you know, intuitive understanding of nature, maybe, and about how we as humans relate to nature, not as being separated, as being separate from it, but as being a part of nature. And then that spoken word part always ends with him inviting the audience to like sort of chant along. And I remember reading somewhere under like a YouTube video, you know, I felt quite offended when he told me to call to a pagan god. I didn't sign up for that. That someone being very peeved apparently by that thought. And I just remember thinking that that was so weird.
Yeah. Well, if you want to be offended, it's very easy to be offended.
And I think that the person who wrote that, they sort of said that it felt very cultish and stuff like that. And yeah, I think if that person is around to see me like something like a Heilung show, they would be probably even more afraid about that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yep,
people.
Yeah.
You know.
People, eh? People, people, people.
Yeah, so definitely...
Great song.
Yeah, definitely a great song. And also one of my favorite songs of that album is definitely the song that comes after that, which is the song Pearl. Do you like that song?
Yeah, I'm not always a super big fan of the floaty female vocals. But I think this song does a perfect mix again with the, at a certain point, the bagpipes just going off and being total badass, and the percussion going on sort of makes up for that. Sorry if I'm butt-hurting anyone. Like, for me, there's also, of course, you have to understand the concept, especially with Found more often, is the language barrier that exists. So then the voice almost becomes an instrument in its own. And then, well, I don't know. I love the song, though. I'm nitpicking, right? I don't just want to go, yeah, great song. Yeah, I love that too.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah. so if I would say, is it up there with my favorites? No. But the album is solid, so there's not one song that I would skip in my Spotify playlist.
I'm curious to hear what your favorite songs of the album are. Yeah, I always really love the song. I especially love the sort of juxtaposition. Is that the word?
The juxtaposition.
Yeah, I hope it means what I think it means. Well, I can just say the contrast. I always really like the contrast between the lyrics being sort of like this English poem, I think, by sort of this really weird and tragic a British poet who was unhappy for most of his life, and, you know, the lyrics being about sort of this unfulfilled love, and then this very sort of Arabic inspired musical backdrop. And I really loved that contrast. And there is a live video of that song where they play it with their singer Zonja Drakulic, who was with them for some time.
I think
it's a video from 2012 or something, and it's when they use that song to sort of introduce the band, where every one of them gets sort of a short solo in that song. And I think that's definitely something that I always enjoyed seeing a lot. So it's definitely one of my favorite songs of the album.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Okay. And by the way, I just looked up juxtaposition for the listeners and myself. Juxtaposition is an actor instance of placing two elements close together or side by side. This is often done in order to compare / contrast the two to show similarities or differences. So yes, I think you were very, very verbally antiquated. Yeah. Good on you. I learned something today. So that contrast is definitely in there. I know what you mean now.
Yeah. So moving over to the next song, which is song number 8. And that song is, of course, called Oinengjar, which is a song that's made after lyrics and music are sort of inspired by a Turkish folk song. I think the Uyghur Turks, which is an ethnic minority in Turkey, and I think the song hails from that musical tradition, and it's about it's a description, I think, of sort of this paradise like garden where young girls and boys play together. And it's, I think the song has a very playful and lighthearted atmosphere to it.
Yep. And at around the 3 minute mark or something, a bit past the middle of the song, the recorder goes wild, and it's amazing the melodies and the rhythms that are sort of twisting there. It's really, really, this is getting close to the favorites, but not quite there.
Interesting. I think it's a song that I always really enjoy when I listen to it, but it's not a song that I have a lot of memories attached to, or that is, I don't know, I wouldn't probably put it on a playlist, because it's just not as prevalent in my mind. And I don't have a lot to say about it, but I like it. It's well arranged, and I think it's definitely, I really love when Faun goes sort of into that Arabic Turkish inspired musical direction. I think it's always it's just a fun musical tradition. Fun is the wrong word, but it's an interesting musical tradition where you can take a lot of interesting influence from.
Definitely, it's challenging to say the least. If you hear some rhythms that they have in the more Eastern traditions, I always gasp at them with my mouth open.
Yeah, it's, I think songs like that can be a really good introduction to that type of music. At least it's been this way for me, where a lot of music out of that region that is more traditional would be probably at a first glance more inapproachable for someone like me or you, who is more used to the Western musical tradition, because there is definitely some differences that might be sort of might make it seem intimidating. But I think songs like that can sort of ease you into that musical world, and I think it's definitely been that way for me.
Interesting to see it as a bridge to another world musically. Well, it's like I said, with all these backgrounds now coming in and you explaining it so beautifully, I had not necessarily connected the dots that this was a very tradition so far away from Germany.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. By the way, I'm sorry if it feels like I'm hogging the microphone a lot. It's just I think I'm sort of like presenting it to Kuhn also a bit, and like next episode is probably gonna be like different when Kuhn gets to choose one of his favorite albums. So yeah.
Uh oh.
But no pressure. So, yeah, and after, like, sort of musically journeying into Turkey, we take a very narrow turn, and we move back to the north, and we come to song number 9, which is the song Polska från Larsson, a traditional Swedish instrumental piece.
Yeah, and it's sort of, you sort of feel it in the song, that it's traditional, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely. And I think, yeah, it's interesting to see, like, to... I mean, Faun always had some, you know, some Norse, like, some northern Scandinavian folk music influence in their song. But it's interesting to see, you know, to, like, sort of look at these songs and then sort of look what they... to see what they did on the Midgard album, and also what, you know, the type of music Oliver is doing with his Scandinavian folk trio Kaunan. So I think it's interesting to see, you know, this sort of as like the foundation where you know, where so much grew from, basically, and especially currently where we see so much of like this sort of like northern Scandinavian folk music inspired stuff being so popular. It's interesting to see that sort of Faun already was hot on that in 2011 and even earlier.
Yeah, it doesn't quite approach the Vardruna Heilung stilo, but it's nice to see that crossover, and I was very happy to see Kaunan live a couple of times. It's really, really cool. But then again, for this version of Polska från Larsson on Eden feels very composed compared to other like things they do with Kaunan. It's a very sweet song.
Oh yeah. Do you think it's too clean?
I think, like, the recorder is really, really up there. And there's not a lot of percussion as well going on. So it's, I think it's deliberately so. But for my tastes, I enjoy it more when they sort of pull everything out of the closet that Faun has to offer. Whilst, on the other hand... Okay. The acoustic concerts that I listened to live with them literally made me cry because it was so good. So it's not basically that there's balls missing in the song. Sorry if I can't say that in the 21st century anymore, people. But I don't know. It's just... It sort of takes you out of the pond zeitgeist. It's just... If you would put it in a graph... It would be very... It's an arrest point or something, but...
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something that we can sort of talk more about at the when we are finished with talking like about the single songs, because I think there's definitely, something to say about like the flow of the tracks and the overall length of the album that we can talk about later. So, but before that, we are still, you know, going towards the end of the album, and we are coming to a song that I would, you know, count also as a classic of that album, and definitely, but also like as a classic of just the Faun live set in general, which is the song Alba.
That's one of my favorites. with Adam Hurst. Thinking of the song almost makes me emotional. It's so nice.
Yeah, and I think it's definitely like for people who are familiar with the German language. It's definitely a song that you can really hold on to, and I think lyrically, it's probably one of the best found songs. At least as far as like, their own lyrics are concerned. It's definitely one, in my opinion, it's definitely one of the strongest songs. Have you ever, translated the lyrics for yourself or like looked at them closer?
No, I was sort of patiently waiting and hoping that you were going to say what it was all about. And no, I have not. And for me, this was always something where I sort of listened through the lyrics and just heard the song, if that makes sense.
Huh. Okay. So I think, if I remember correctly, the song is sort of like, for one part, it's about the sort of the losing... No, it's about Adam and Eve sort of losing the paradise because of the sin they commit and the feeling of, feeling lost afterwards, and sort of, being away from that idyllic place. But I also think it's about I think it's a love song, obviously, about like a couple of lovers who have to. Who are trying to hold on and to find themselves in this like large and sometimes frightening world, and so I think in that regard it's a very beautiful song. And I think if I remember, wait, I can just read it. Oh yeah, so the title Alba is referring to sort of like a type of medieval song, which is called like Tagelied in German, which means like a day song, which I think is a category of song from the minstrels, where they were recounting their days and how much they missed their beloved lady. And in the Roman Roman languages, that is like Alba. So that's where the title comes from. And that's also, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, a bit of a long-winded explanation, but I think, it's cool to see that where, sort of the inspiration comes from, and then it's, so to use like the inspiration, but not like in a very obvious way, but rather sort of weave it into like the overall feeling of the song and like sort of mix it with different influences. And I think that's something that's very beautifully done with that song.
Yeah. It's gorgeous, and I love the basically every song with a cello is really nice to me because it's beautiful. But Adam Hurst also putting in his feels, it's really, 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 really pretty. If you don't know it, my god!
Okay, so let's move to the next song then. Song number 11, which is Ines Avalach, a traditional. Breton folk song, arrangement by Faun, but it's based on a traditional melody, and yeah, it's a very good song, I think.
Yep, I think that would be in my top three as well. Especially when it goes into overdrive, there's definitely a two split in the song, and. It's I don't know. It's just really good.
Yeah, there's I always enjoy one part of the song where they sort of, I think is it a key change maybe? Or I think like for some time the bouzouki sort of stays on this one chord very rhythmically while sort of the melody sort of carries on. And that's always every time I hear that I sort of smile because I think it's such a cool musical moment. Definitely. It's an instrumental song, so it doesn't have any vocals or lyrics, but I think it's awesome.
Yep, and some great bouzouki melodies as well, following the flute, and yeah, it's just I don't think there's a whole deeper layer to it, but it's just a very, very pleasant, very, very nicely written arrangement.
And I think yeah, I think the title obviously I think refers to sort of yeah, one of these to like these islands out of Celtic mythology, sort of where you also sort of maintain eternal youth, and it's about, you know, this the realm of the other folk, of the fairy. So you know, it's interesting how they on this album they jump sort of like from culture to culture and from like tradition to tradition to sort of pull all these threads together and make this like make it this cool and very diverse experience.
Yeah, if you hear this, if you hear all the talk and the different culture, it feels like a patchwork of cultures and myths, legends, but it has never felt to me like a dysfunctional patchwork. I've never really noticed how diverse it is, and I think that extra good job, basically.
Yeah, totally. So, yeah, going to the next song, which is song number 12, Arcadia, which again, talking about like pulling from different tradition. So the title of the song Arcadia refers to like some to a region of ancient Greece, a very remote region of ancient Greece where, you know, even people back then thought it was sort of like the realm of myth and legend, where all types of like creatures dwelled. And today, I think it's still, yeah, we still viewed it as that. And then the lyrics for that song partly come from like a Finnish sort of like traditional song, and then the second part of the lyrics are again from our boy Oscar Wilde. So, you know, again we have this pulling from three different regions of the world to put them together to, yeah, to create a song.
Yeah, this song is pretty intense to listen to right from the get go. It doesn't have a really build up. It just puts you in there, and it feels like a wild ride for some reason. It feels uneasy when I listen to it.
Yeah, it's definitely a wild ride, and it feels, especially because they end with that part about, you know, with that excerpt of the poem by Wilde, and I have the lyrics here, and I always thought that they sounded so, they feel a little bit, you know, they obviously come from a different time than ours, and they feel like something out of like a very fairy and ancient realm. It's blow some trumpet loud and free, leave the hills of Arcady, give thine oaten pipe away, leave the hills of Arcady. Once the land of liberty, land of ancient chivalry, blow some trumpet loud and free, leave the hills of Arcady. And I always thought that sounded so promising, you know, like really taking you on a journey there. And yeah, I definitely, such a, yeah, it works so well.
Yeah, lyric-wise, I've never really done that, like taking poetic lyrics from someone and put it to music, but it's actually interesting. It opens you up to the stuff that you maybe couldn't write, or it brings back a spirit of time that is obviously gone. If you write it now, it's not old text, so it adds a bit to the magic. So it's something that you see a lot. Quite a lot in pagan folk bands, taking poems, basically all like these romantic, lovelorn, maybe depressed poets, and then creating something beautiful and alive out of it, with an extra dimension. And it's a nice text.
Yeah. We've done that with Waldkauz in the past, actually, where we've taken we've taken poems, or like, yeah, especially, but sometimes it's hard because a lot of it is very, it's made for for, you know, for being read as a poem. Not really, they don't really work that well as lyrics a lot of the time, because the sentences are too convoluted and too just long also to really work in a song like that. But it's, yeah, when it works, it really works.
Yeah, yeah.
So talking about sort of, well, no, I guess that doesn't work. Well, let's just go to the next song, which is song number 13, which is a very underrated song, I think, The Market Song. How do you feel about that song?
I think I'm one of the persons that underrates it, to be crude. It's okay. I'm comparing it to the rest, like, of this album, where there's songs that resonate with me on so many levels, and this is just, it's almost like a D&D soundtrack. So in that regard, they do it really well, like painting a picture of the markets. And I'm reading here that it's even dedicated to organizers from Fairworld's Castfest and etc. As a place where cultures meet, and I think they did that very well. You sort of hear the cultures, the image they paint with salesmen, circus things. So it's good, but like on its own, it's good. In the album, it sort of gets lost to other songs.
Yeah, I think musically it is. It's partly based on an English folk song, Kopse Home Fair or something, like the one they sing about, Kopse Home Fair, which was apparently this sort of market in Cumberland, which was in northern England, and then they used that song and then wrote a new chorus and a bridge, you know, for that song, to make it more of their own. And I always liked, like, especially these days, it really makes me long for like the festivals and the markets, and it really encapsulates like the magic of that. And I think it's cool that, you know, it's an old English folk song, and it's interesting to see that people back then sort of, you know, felt the same sense of wonderment and amazement about sort of these type of events. And I think it's lovely that apparently that is such universally human experience that it still sort of works for us today.
The markets do get a little bit crazier maybe, but it's definitely something that is timeless. And I think they did a good job of letting this song be relatable to people visiting markets, fairs, and whatnot then, but also capturing the older time spirit. So in that regard, it's very well done.
Okay. Now, we're coming to the last song of the album, song number 14, which is, of course, the song Golden Apples. And I think, it's quite long. It's like over 7.5 minutes long. And it's sort of this very calm and vibey outro to this concept album about Eden, you know. And I think it's definitely, I really only listen to that song when I listen to the whole album. I think I've rarely listened to it on itself, but maybe you feel different about it.
I quite like it in its whole vibey floatiness. Is there a mood where I'm like, oh, I really need to listen to Golden Apples right now? I'm not quite sure, but if it does come around, I find it very, very pleasant. It's like you're floating towards something, something very, very nice. And it's a good outro to let the entire, I'm calling it an outro. It's a good last song to sort of let the entire album sink in. So the album wouldn't be complete without it. But I don't necessarily, like I said, I don't crave the song per se, but it's really good.
Yeah, and again, it's a cool mixture because most of the lyrics are based, and the song are based on like an old English nursery rhyme. So like songs you would be sung if you were putting someone to bed or to sleep. But then later on, there's this spoken word part, which I think was, I don't remember who it was spoken by. I want to say it was, the narration is by, well, I don't know. But the spoken word part is like a part of a poem by Rumi, which is like this Islamic poet. And I want to read it really quick because I think it really sums up like a lot of what the album is about. And it is, wait until you take a look inside yourself. Recognize what is growing there. O seeker, a leaf in this garden means more than all the leaves you will find in paradise.
Yeah.
Which I think is so beautiful because a lot of like Christian mythology or Christian theology is about like having lost that paradise and having lost that, you know, connection to the divine or, you know, whatever you want to call it. But then to sort of end the album on this thought of, you know, maybe the paradise that we can have is the one that we can create in ourselves. I think that's a really good lesson to learn, you know, to cultivate yourself to be, you know, that sense of peace and, harmony that you want to see in the world.
Yeah, and the voice that reads out these beautiful words is very, very soothing and charismatic as well. So it's the perfect ending to this amazing album.
Yeah. I want to see if I can find out who did like the... I did like the spoken word part, but I don't want to like sort of just sit here in silence while I try and skim like through the booklet to see if I can find it credited. I mean, it should be credited somewhere, right?
Yeah. Otherwise, it's
Oh! Here it is. It's spoken by Mark Lewis.
Okay, I need to find that dude.
I don't know
dude.
Who that is.
I want him to read me to sleep, man.
So yeah, with that we've talked about every song on the album to some regard, and I mean we're clocking in at like over 60 minutes now, but I think we should maybe this will be like a little bit of a longer episode, which I think is fine. You know, we had to sort of establish the concept of what we want to do with this new format, and also it's a very long album, so you know there's a lot of songs to talk about. The album clocks in at like 72 minutes. So do you feel it's too long?
No, I think it's very diverse to keep it interesting. It's, there's no songs that there's oftentimes you have albums where you're like, oh, not this song, skip. There's none on here for me. So no, I make it a double CD and bring me another.
I also think for this album it really works. There's not, I mean, obviously I think there's, I mean, there's maybe a couple songs where I would be like, I wouldn't, I don't know. I don't want to make that decision, but yeah. So, we agree that it is probably a very good Pagan Folk album, right?
Definitely.
So yeah, well, of course we'd love to hear your opinions on the album, and you can like write us or just comment and share your favorite songs of it. We'd love to like hear your thoughts about it, and where it ranks in your sort of personal top Pagan Folk or just medieval whatever albums. So that sort of was the first installment of a new series, maybe maybe after two albums, we decide that we don't actually like talking about like specific albums for such a long time. It's a bit, I think it's a bit a different thing, because so far we've been mostly talking about our own experiences with Pagan Folk and how, you know, how sort of we do things. And so going so deep into the work of another, like of other artists, is maybe it's a bit unusual, you know, for me at least it is, talking about it to that extent. But I, I really like talking about music, and that's the whole reason why I started this.
Yep.
So you just have to...
It's mainly talking about other people's music for other people, which is the weird part.
Yes, but, true. Yeah, and I hope really try and do the thing that I talked about in the beginning, where you maybe like listen to the song before we talk about it, so that you actually sort of have it in your head and sort of can sort of like maybe follow along a bit easier. So yeah, but I think I'm good with talking about Eden. We can come to the sort of the next point on the list, which would be our new additions to our ever-growing playlist, right?
Yes, your anchor in this crazy corona time is, of course, the Meet a Moonlight recommendations at the end of the podcast. We all know that you skipped through to this part, but it's okay.
And of course, I think I have to apologize because I think after the last episode, I didn't update the playlist. So after today, there's gonna be two new tracks, and then, well, no hell, there's gonna be four new tracks even.
Wow.
No, eight. Wow, eight. No, wait. Yes. Wow. As you can tell, numbers not really my strong suit.
Yep. But that's okay. Because we don't do math here. So, yeah. Wow, great.
So
great,
good.
Yep. Okay, my first song is by a band from the Netherlands. And the band is called Kesser, sorry. In the beginning, there were a lot of organizers and people confused about how you pronounce their band name, but it's Kesser.
To be honest, I think there still is.
Oh, yeah, probably. Being probably. Very confused. But let me now eliminate the doubt from this world. It's Kesser. And I chose a song with balls. So there I go again with the balls. I chose a very cool oomphy song called Troll Kalamik with some cool badass vocals. Great. Like, they have called themselves epic folk, and I think this song is a very good example of why they can be called epic folk. So if you don't know them yet, check it out.
So my first pick is a more traditional band, I guess. It's a Scottish folk band. They're called Talisk. And I think the person who recommended them to me might be even listening to this podcast. So Sean, if you're listening, it's a really good band. So yeah, it's a Scottish folk band. It's just three people, and they play concertina, fiddle, and guitar. It's just instrumental music, and it sounds very modern, and they play a lot of original tunes. And it's, you know, together with Lenkim, whom I recommended in an earlier episode, it's really the only two Irish folk bands, or like Celtic folk bands, I guess, that I feel like returning to when I'm in the mood for that. And the song that I'm going to put on the playlist of them is the song called Montreal, which, just check it out. It's super catchy, and it has some great melodies.
Nice. I like some Irish folk as well from time to time. From time to time. And of course, Joe makes me listen to Shantala, which is also a really good band. But that is not my next recommendation. My next recommendation has a little bit of a story to it. At my first fantasy festival, I saw these guys, and they are actually a bagpipe band that doesn't exist anymore, sadly. It was mainly father, mother, and son, and some other crazy guys behind drums, and they were just, they did a great charismatic show, and I never really liked the whole bagpipe thing, but these guys nailed it. They had the bellies for it, they had the charisma for it, they had the talent for it. I'm talking about a band called Shelmish, and I'm mainly talking about their folk and not their folk rock. And I find their edition of Rabenballade, with a great video, a very charming one.
Interesting, huh? Okay, wow, that's a band with a lot of history in the German medieval scene.
Yep, I can't imagine.
Oh, cool. I'll tell you some stories later.
Cool.
Okay, so Rabenballade. Okay. My second band, or my second song, comes from a German band. I think it's maybe you could call it sort of dark folk. And the song, yeah. So it's you know, they have violin and some flute and clarinet and acoustic guitars, but they also have like a drummer who plays more in a rock style. So I always like the contrast between sort of these sort of like lighter sounds from the acoustic instruments with like these heavy, hard-hitting drums, which is also something I think we do a lot with Waldkauz. So maybe there's some inspiration there from them. And the song I'm choosing is called Destrunken 2. It's a very it's a fast song with some great climax and some very cool melodies, and yeah, check it out. So yeah, thank you all for, well, hopefully listening to this new episode of Meet and Moonlight. The times are still weird, and we're recording this sort of a couple days after, you know, the another unfortunate event that's been happening in the United States. I think you all know what I'm talking about. And yeah, it's weird to sit down and talk about, you know, something as lighthearted and as you know, fantastic maybe as pagan folk can be. But I think it's important to sort of have these things as safe havens, but also try, you know, not to shy away from facing, you know, the problems that we have in our times, and try to stay informed, and try to, you know, be compassionate with people everywhere. And yeah, I mean, and I hope we can give you some solace with this, and I hope that we can all see each other again next week when there will be a new episode of Meat and Moonlight.
The Pagan Folk Podcast. Yes, thank you all for listening. Basically, what Niklas said was a very nice outro. Goodbye.